Will you stand up in the back here? Dr. Stephen Still was my undergraduate advisor at Ohio State. So that tells you how long Dr. Still's been working at this. I just want to thank you. It's been very inspirational, and some of your classes were some of the reasons I went into horticulture. So thank you. I'd like to talk about some of my classes for the next few minutes. I've been teaching plant materials for over 25 years at Texas A&M University, and we've had a collected data on a regular basis about enrollment and what students' opinions were and things and how we might improve those courses. And so I thought, well, is there anything we can glean out of that that we might be able to link to improve performance in the classes? So what we had were four courses. These were two undergraduate courses, one offered in the fall, 306, the other offered in the spring, 308, woody plants in the fall, other plants in the spring. And then the graduate courses, 608 and 609, were stacked courses offered along with those. Grades, and we'll see why that's kind of important as we interpret data in a few minutes. Typically 50% of our grade was associated with the identification and proffer names of laboratories, materials for about 50%, and that would be for both of the undergraduate courses. And then we would have primarily identification related to aesthetic uses and cultural information in our lecture portions of those courses. Graduate courses were set up a little bit differently. They had to go through the same things the undergraduates did, but they actually had additional meeting times that they also had. And in these, we did topic-oriented reading papers on the areas, writing papers, a lot of field trips, and guest lectures were also associated with those course projects, etc. So that's sort of how those were set up. Typically, the classes within had midterms, two midterms in the lecture, and a final, and spot quizzes. And then in the labs, we would have a weekly quiz and then a midterm and a lecture final. Everything cumulative. Well, any of you who've dealt with plant materials courses realize that students tend to get overwhelmed pretty quickly. And so one of the questions that they always had was, could we somehow break it into components? And so that's something we looked at. In addition, there was a general shift in the focus of the courses over the period of time. We went from more of a horticultural-based aesthetic, how we grew these in production systems, and how we would utilize that into our landscapes, to looking at the plants more as design elements and looking at sustainability and the use of ecosystem services related to the plants. So that's kind of an evolution that went along as well. In response to the students' request to try and reduce the overwhelming amount of material and comprehension of that, we instituted a couple of changes that had some fairly dramatic impacts on the courses. In 2014-2015 academic years, we switched, dropped our required midterm in the lecture portion, took points from it and points from the comprehensive final, and put them into modular sections that were testing only on those modular components as we went through the semester. This was successful, as you'll see in a moment, and so hastened the inclusion of that strategy into the labs by making the individual lab quizzes modular as well, based on the materials that we'd covered most recently. We did retain a comprehensive nature to the final, the midterms, and the lab final. So, where's the data originating from? It's originating from performance in the students in the classes. It's originating from evaluations the students provided us from the courses, and also questions that we were asking the students along the way and trying to find ways to improve those. And some of the data that would include analysis of enrollment, midterm grades, and we used that as a proxy for how well they were performing early on in the course. And then, of course, final grade, number of unexcused absences, take note of that one in a while. Student reported study times for a whole range of activities related to the class, what the student's major was, what their experience level was, in other words, their grade rank, freshman, sophomore, etc., whether the course was a requirement for a degree or not, and what the perceived level of difficulty that the students thought the courses were at. We analyzed these using frequency analysis, mean separation, and correlation analysis depending on the particular data that we were looking at. Just to comment, as we look at the data separated by majors, we had 20 majors in one set of courses, 17 majors in another that had at least four participants per course in those majors. Okay. In contrast, we had others that had as many as 480 participants in a particular major in the course. We had another 10 majors that had less than four students. We did not include them in the analysis when we looked at majors because we thought it would be skewing the data. Okay. So enrollment trends, comment. We kind of look at 306 and 308 as one combined group in the fall. 308 and 609 are the combined group in the spring. You'll note that there's a significant drop in about 2009, 2010. At this point, we had a budget cut, and we went from five laboratories of 18 to 20 per student to four laboratories of 18 to 20 per student. But if you look at our total numbers, basically, we were filling those laboratories. So we went from about 75 to 80 students in the last 10 years or so, and we had between 90 and 100 in the prior 10 years. Now, looking at grades, and this is a little messy, but if you'll focus on the blue, this is the proportion of students receiving a given grade in each year of this course. Blue represents the A's. That's where everybody wants to be. The other end of the stage is the Q drop, or W, where they withdrew, or the F. Okay? A couple of things I want to point out. First of all, note that in 2014-2015 is when we first made some of these changes in modulizing the students' study of the materials. And notice that the proportion of A's and B's increased fairly dramatically at that point in the course. And as a matter of fact, for three offerings in a row, where two-thirds or more of the students were earning A's and B's, which was quite a decided change from previously when we had a more normal bell-shaped distribution to our grades. And in contrast, that occurred where the A's were the largest number only twice in the prior 10 or 11 years of that course before that time. So I think it's a very real trend that we're seeing. Something else is that A&M is now looking at identifying bottleneck courses. What's a bottleneck course? Bottleneck course is any course where greater than 10% of the students have earned a D, F, or a W withdrawal cumulatively. In those. One of the things that this did help us to do by modulizing the study of this is that with students were performing a little better, and it certainly also reduced the amount of students we would have falling into that category, and hopefully not throwing our course into being one of those that would be seen as a bottleneck in the system. This is the spring course, and by comparison, just look, here we have five semesters in a row, again, looking from 13-14 when we instituted the change, where we have A's and B's constituting the largest proportion of the students, and also in comparison, only three times in the prior 11 years had we had that occur. So, again, we think this is a very real change in the performance of the students over that period of time. Not going to spend a lot of time about graduate student distribution on grades because we all know grad students all get A's and B's, right? At least we'd like to think that they do. And that really is borne out in the data where they typically do perform much better. And so I won't spend a lot of time talking about their grade performance in the classes. I do want to look at what things now can we say might be correlated with these successes we see in the classroom. And so one of the first things that came to mind was how well a student would get off to a start in the course. And so if we look at midterms versus final grades as a proctor of what the early performance should be, you'll notice that there's typically a slight drop between the midterm grades and the final grades, particularly in the spring course, which is in 308. If you'll notice, that's where the drop-off occurs. The other thing to note is that our change took place in 2014 2015, and then again in 2017, that those numbers came together, and we actually in the last couple of years had instances where the final grades were greater than the midterm grades, which had not occurred in the past. Okay. Similar venue is occurring with grad students, but again, they have a tendency to perform well, so they're pretty much following each other fairly closely through the semester. I do want to point out that change in midterm to final grade was a drop of 7% for the spring undergraduate class, where it was only about a 1 to 2% drop for the other classes. On average, spring fever's a real thing. Okay. Unexcused absences. You'll note that the graduates tend to come to class, the undergraduates not quite as much, and that's reflected in the grades as well. Study times were interesting. They fell within the normal recommendations for the university, self-reported by the students, but typically a 2 to 3 hours per credit hour of study was expected outside of class, and that's about what we had. Graduate courses were 4 hours, the undergraduate were 3 hour courses. Something else that was noteworthy here is realize that our undergraduates enrolled in the courses are predominantly there because they have to be. It's required for their degree. The graduate students in the fall are required to be there because they're in the MLA programs and urban planning programs. And in the spring graduate course, they're there mostly because they just want to take the course. It's not surprising they rate the course less difficultly than do the students who are there because they have to be. If we look at rank impact, the experience level of the students, a couple of take-homes. One is with our seniors. Surprisingly, we only have about a 2% variation based on, or 3% for students, depending on whether a freshman to a senior in the courses. But we have a flip-flop with the seniors in the fall being the highest on average over about a 19-year span and being the lowest on average over a 19-year span in the spring. So I'm guessing senioritis is beginning to set in. That's reflected in their missing extra days as unexcused absences. Again, study times are typically what we would expect, and don't seem to differ tremendously among the groups. One thing I do want to point out is these are upper division classes meant for juniors and seniors, and when we have lower division students, like a freshman taking them, they do typically find them to be more difficult. The other large group that I want to talk about, impacts, and man, this is a lesson to the students, not how to make a slide, okay, is we've got the, I couldn't list all 20 different majors for both of the classes, but what you see here are the fall class 306 and the spring class 308, in which we have the three best majors on average from their grades from the course in the green, and of course those that went into the red, which are the three lowest performing majors. I know those abbreviations may or may not mean much to you, but what I can make as a generalization is that wildlife and fishery sciences, rangeland ecology and management, and forest science, particularly arboriculture students, and those from USA landscape and architecture students tended to be the best performing students. Those also had considerable plant materials exposure and background previously. The ones with the most challenging performance in the class were those that were either in general studies that were just beginning out, those that were in the agronomy or turf program, and those that were in AGLS, and this is a probationary degree for students being admitted that are on the borderline or who are in trouble going out. And so it's not unusual that they may not do as well in the classes. Also, the landscape leadership courses at both the college and the university level tended to have lower performances. Just a comment is that they do tend to look more difficult, see the courses as being more difficult as they go. Four take-home messages for you. Only two things were correlated with high degree of success in the course. One is kick it from the first day. If you got midterms grades that are high, you're going to finish high. Okay, so start out right. I explained a lot of the variation in that. Dude, go to class. Okay. I can directly relate in a negative manner the number of unexcused absences I have and explain anywhere from 20 to 65% of the grades in those. The other thing, and this, Dr. Still, I'm sorry, it doesn't really matter how long you study, it's how efficiently you study. Some of our longest time studying reporting was actually some of our poorer students in the class. They were already in trouble. And the final thing I'll give you is that after looking at 19 years of data, spring fever and senioritis are a real thing. So if you're in those areas, kick it to the end and make sure you finish out strong. Okay. And I think I'm probably out of time.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.